everybody's talk today. I am hoping to give a slightly different perspective. Yeah, let's keep a little bit of light. Yeah.
If you want, just do one.
So I was hoping to give a slightly different perspective to the mechanisms that drive the reorganization of endothelial cells into networks. This is work that may be familiar to some of you because it started a long time ago, but together with the old things, I hope to be presenting some new things. So this work started at the University of Washington in collaboration with Bob Vernon, who was at the time there, who presented to us pictures of early embryonic vasculature and also experimental results for modeling the formation of, so this is images of early embryonic vasculature in the quail embryo, I believe. So the experiments that Bob Vernon was doing were in vitro, and they were an in vitro model of hopefully what was happening experimentally. So we were trying to understand how endothelial cell precursors reorganize into these networks. And the experiments that were carried out were as follows. I think it was bovine aortic endothelial cells, maybe other cell types too, that were plated onto a thin layer of Matrigel. And a few hours after plating them, the cells were initially plated at random, but afterwards they formed clusters. And here you can see the clusters. And most of the cells the cells in the matrix are accumulated into this island. So even though the matrix was originally uniform spread, it seems that together with the cells, the matrix also accumulated underneath the cell clusters. And you can also see barely some lines forming in between the cell clusters. So they were believed to be tension lines that appeared as the cells reorganized. So up to this stage, there were no signs of active cell motility. So the cells didn't show any lamellipodia. It was thought that cell migrated because they were protruding filopodia that were adhering onto the gel, and by pulling onto the gel, they were redistributing the matrix and everything that was adhering onto the matrix. However, once the cells, once these matrix lines formed, the cells that were adhering onto the matrix lines moved from the clusters onto the matrix lines, filling them up. And by filling them up, this pattern was formed. So white is the area that is occupied by the cells, and black is area void of cells. So this was a mechanism for forming vascular network that is different to the angiogenesis, where cells respond to chemical gradients. And the paper appeared in 1992. At that time, most of the network formation was thought of as being chemically driven, and here we had a mechanism that appeared as being mechanically driven because of cell forces distorting the extracellular matrix. And the question was whether these mechanical forces were able to regenerate a network like that. So the mathematical model was in two spatial dimensions because the pattern was mostly three-dimensional. And I kept track of cell density, how many cells we had per square millimeter, the deformation of the extracellular matrix, where I was and where I went later on, as well as the deformation in the third dimension, which I track separately, the thickness of the gel. So because cell division is slow, it didn't affect the patterning mechanism, so I ignored it and I assumed just a conservation law for the endothelial cells. And the flux here is due to two different types of movement. One is the passive movements. The cells are adhering onto matrix that is being distorted. So as the matrix is being distorted, it carries on cells with it. So this is the cell convection, and the cells will also move actively on areas where the matrix is aligned. So this is modeled as a strain-dependent movement. And this, so the assumption between this strain-dependent movement is the following, that if we take a piece of gel and somehow stretch it, then the cells are going to move primarily in the direction of the stretch. And this was actually motivated also by supported by experiments by Korff and Augustine, who did the following experiment. They took collagen or fibrin gel, stretched it to twice its original length, and then placed a multicellular spheroid on the stretched gel. And what was observed is that the cells started to migrate in the direction of the stretch. So cells do feel the alignment of the extracellular matrix. So this flux is a strain quantity, a tensor quantity, and a colleague of mine modeled it as this tensor that compares the strain of the matrix in the different directions. And for example, if we assume that the matrix is stretched to twice its original length and compressed, then the diffusion tensor gets this form, showing that there is more movement in the direction of the stretch. So this referred to the cell movement. Now I want to talk about forces. So we know that cells can exert forces, and Harry showed it first by putting fibroblasts on rubber, silicon rubber substrata, and seeing how small cells can wrinkle up these silicon sheets for large distances. So we've assumed that the cells exert attraction forces, and because of contact inhibition, cell traction decreases as cell density increases, so N here denotes cell density. And Kolodny and Wisolmerski, I met Kolodny here some 11 years ago, who told me that they actually had measurements for the traction forces of bovine aortic endothelial cells, and so I use those measurements since. And the cells pull onto the extracellular matrix. The matrix has to be respond with certain material properties. So I assume the simplest possible viscoelastic solid, an assumption that probably should be reviewed nowadays. But I assume that the matrix behaved like a void body. So I took into consideration the elastic stresses and the viscous stresses that arise in the matrix. E is the Young's modulus, nu is the Poisson ratio, theta is the dilation, nu1 and nu2 are the viscosities. And here the T is a rate of change with respect to time of the strain. And the matrix gel really is a very difficult material to characterize because it changes, it can, from batch to batch, I talk to people and they tell me that they're not exactly sure what is inside, a lot of laminin and growth factors. So I haven't found really a good mechanical characterization of matrix gel. I tried to get the Young's modulus by using Hertz theory, by placing a sphere onto a gel and seeing how much it indents the gel, and I got this is a very crude first estimate of what the modulus of matrix gel could be. And as the cells pull the gel and distort it, there is yet another force that resists the movement of the gel, and this comes from the fact that the gel is adhering onto the petri dish. So here I'm assuming that this force is proportional to the velocity of the gel, and it is inversely proportional to the thickness of the gel, assuming that the farther out the cells are from the dish, the less they're going to feel the presence of the dish. And assuming that the stresses of the cells are in plane, I can also deduce that the thickness of the matrix, using simple mechanics arguments, is related to the dilation theta. The fact that the matrix forces are also inversely proportional to the thickness was motivated by these experiments that showed that when endothelial cells were plated on a ramp of changing thickness of matrigel, they changed in size. So it seemed that size did affect the size of the networks that formed, and in layers of thick gel, much larger networks formed than in areas where the matrix was thin. So because the time to form the pattern was about a day, and the scale of the pattern is small, we ignore inertial effects, and we assume that the forces, the cell traction forces, are in balance with the viscoelastic forces. And we have also a cell conservation equation. And these are the equations that I try to solve initially numerically. I use slope limiter upwind methods to capture steep spatial gradients that result. And I used Cartesian grid. And I assumed initially that the gel was not distorted and that there was a uniform cell thickness, and the cells were spread uniformly except for a small perturbation. So there was a small variation in the distribution of the cells. And I also assumed that the cells didn't flow across the boundary.
Oh, can I ask a question?
Yes.
So here, one seems to have no units, right?
So these are non-dimensional, I have non-dimensionalized the parameters.
Oh, so by, compared with like real water problems, what's the roughly magnitude of the cell density?
I try to make the cell density be comparable to the cell seeding density. I don't exactly remember, I think it was about 40,000 cells per square millimeter, but I don't remember.
Was it confluent?
No, it was not confluent.
Okay.
It was not confluent. It was, I assume, uniformly distributed, but not confluent. I think confluent is about 20, 30 times denser than the density that I have assumed. So these are the results of the computer simulations. So black is an area that is void of cell, and white is an area that is filled with cells. And just to give you also, so this is, this would be the result of the numerical simulations. Just to give you a feel for how the pattern arises, I'm assuming that the cells are distributed with some variation in their distribution, and in areas where the cells are slightly higher, if they are dense enough so that they can pull hard enough, they can overcome the elastic restoring forces and they can generate higher clusters, and at the same time we empty the neighboring areas of the cells, whereas if they cannot pull enough, then the elastic restoring forces restore the gel to a uniform situation. So numerically, the simulations proceeds as follows. We have, we start from something that is almost uniform, and then we see the networks that appear, and you get areas that are void of cells, and in time, those loops grow bigger. Some other areas like this one will coalesce. And this is not a steady state. The pattern continues to reorganize, but I don't want to show pictures of what happens afterwards, because already we are in a regime of of large strains, and my model assumes that it is valid for really small strains. So I would expect realistically the gel to start stiffening as it polymerizes, as the cells pull on it, and this is not something that the model, has taken into consideration. But still, the agreement between the networks that were observed experimentally and the numerical simulation is pretty good, saying that there may be something there.
Is there any way to get a qualitative comparison, or quantitative?
Well, I guess one could do a Fourier transform of them. I haven't done. Also, I didn't do it. Well, I tried doing it at some point, and my results were biased a lot because of the boundary conditions that I'm using. Because I'm assuming that the gel doesn't move at the boundary, so all the comparison is messed up. So I should have a better boundary condition, and then I could do it. calculated the strain separately.
So do we have a strain map here?
No, I haven't given you a strain map, or I don't remember having a strain map here. But the strain map really is the negative of this image.
Yeah.
So this is the extracellular matrix distribution in terms of thickness. This is the H parameter. So you see that it is empty, it is thinner in areas that have less cells, and it is thicker in areas that have cells. Okay, and you take the negative of that, and you get a feel for what the strain is like. Basically, these are regions of high strain. These are regions where the black are the regions where the matrix is stretched, and the white are the regions where the matrix is clumped together. So this is another simulation that shows how S was a measure of the viscous drag of the matrix across the dish. And when I increase this parameter, I get that the scale of the pattern decreases. And actually, this also happens when I decrease the thickness of the gel. By changing the traction, if I make the traction too low, I get no pattern, so that wasn't very interesting to show. By decreasing the traction, I still get pattern, but at a much larger scale. So changing cell traction seems to be able to control the scale of the pattern. And just for the fun of it, I also tried changing the thickness of the gel and seeing how the network size changed, and it did what it was supposed to compare to the experiments. I also wanted to get a feel for how the equations behaved. So I did a linear stability analysis. I assumed growth rate sigma for a certain wave number k. And I get the characteristic equation, which gives me this result. I get unstable modes, positive growth rates, if the traction, the total traction, tau is the traction for one cell, and nu is the seeding cell density. So if the total traction is high enough to overcome the elastic restoring forces, E was the Young's modulus, then I can get pattern. D was the diffusion coefficient of the matrix, and H0 was the initial thickness of the matrix. So the first run of this model indicated that I can get networks to form via mechanical assumptions, mechanical interaction between the cells and the extracellular matrix, that pattern pattern forms if the traction is or the cell density is sufficiently high, and the pattern size was governed by viscosity and cell traction and the matrix stiffness. And so I thought I had shown that at least that a mechanical mechanism could predict the formation of networks until this model appeared in the literature by a group in Italy, Gamba and Preziosi and others, who were able to show that similar type networks appear if you assume chemical interactions between the cells. So at that point, I was baffled. They did a model for vasculogenesis. And they assumed that, again, you have a population of cells that moves with a certain velocity, v. But they assumed inertial effects for the velocity, and that were controlled by the chemical gradients. This is a pressure term, so cells repel each other out, which actually I think was a nice part of the model. And also the cells produce a chemoattractant, which diffuses and it decays naturally. So the first thing that I didn't know, and I'm still not sure about, is that the cells actually, endothelial cells can produce VEGF. So since then, I think I have seen enough evidence for that. But I was not sure about how chemical forces can induce the velocity to change. And in fact, the answer came from Vanderbilt. When I arrived there a year and a half ago, realized that they had developed a microfluidic chamber. So this, I was not involved in this work, but I think it is very nice. So this, in this microfluidic chamber, what happens is that they can generate linear gradients of a chemoattractant. They have two inputs. One input has just the chemoattractant, the other one has growth medium or just some medium. And through bypassing those two inputs through an array of little channels, they mix them together so that in the end, you see here there are five inputs to the channel where the cells are plated. So you have a high density of the chemoattractant and low density and a smooth degradation in between. And in fact, both computer simulations and measurements show that they were able to achieve exactly linear gradients of the chemoattractant. So this was nice because this means that the gradient of the chemical now is a constant. Of course, its quality decreases as you go along the channel because the chemical diffuses, but still for quite a distance into the channel we were able to observe cells in a linear gradient. And so we they let the cells into the channel move, and they did two types of motion. One was along the flow direction because the channel is continually perfused with this mixture. And they also move in the vertical direction. They move in the vertical direction because of the presence of the linear gradient. And so by keeping track of the individual cell paths and averaging over many cell paths, we were able to find that the cells move constant distances in constant time intervals. So the velocities stay constant when the cell density is constant. These different lines show the distances the cells travel in the vertical direction under different flow rates. So here the flow rate is 1 millimeter per minute, here it is 2, 3, 6, 20. I don't know why the cells seem to be moving faster in the Y direction when the perfusion rate is faster, but I don't know. So this work was not on endothelial cells. This work was on HL60 cells. So now we want to put endothelial cells and see really what the response is. And I think this would be an experiment that would show whether it is reasonable to assume that the inertia effects of chemoattractant forces on the cells. Also, a question to think about how the chemical, the chemotaxis assumptions could lead to the formation of larger networks when you are plating cells on a layer of changing thickness. It is possible, you know, one could assume that the chemoattractants take longer to diffuse inside a thicker gel, but this is something to think about. And also, another question that needs to be asked is what determines the distance between adjacent aggregates? Is it chemical factors or is it mechanical factors? So, I saw that there were many people that were looking into angiogenesis, so I thought, okay, I could add into my model and the assumption that cells move also under chemical gradients and see really whether it was able to capture some of the features of our growing blood vessel network. And so in the equations, the flux now represents not only the passive cell convection and movement along areas of aligned matrix fibers, but I also now include chemotaxis in the more traditional sense of chemotaxis, where the velocity is proportional to the chemical gradient. And I include also cell proliferation. In the simulation that I will show you, I assume that the proliferation rate is constant, but one could make it a function of either the growth factor or the matrix strain, etc. And I assume for the chemical that it is degraded by the cells and it is uptaken by the cells. So I'm not assuming that the cells produce a chemical factor.
Go back again, please.
Sorry?
Is that, what is that, is that a minus gamma n?
Yes. I assume that the cells degrade the chemical. Or they, no. Maybe that should be a minus gamma C.
Yeah.
That the cells,
minus
yeah. Yeah, yeah. Sorry.
The last term is that
cells uptake the. It is a minus. The chemical concentration is reduced because of the uptake by the cells.
It's degradation of the cells should be minus gamma NC.
Sorry?
Minus gamma NC.
No, just decay is minus gamma C.
Yeah,
yeah, decay, minus gamma C. That should
yeah.
be minus gamma C.
Minus gamma, no.
But the last
degradation by the cells, right?
Sorry?
Degradation by the cells. So then it should be.
Ah, the minus gamma, yeah, degradation.
Minus delta.
Well, I am. Yeah, I don't. It's degradation by the cells. I don't remember actually what I had put into the numerics, to be honest. If it is a degradation by the cells, it could be minus gamma times N times the concentration of the chemical gradient. So, but I don't have any production of the chemotractant. And first I did a stability analysis again to see really the pattern forming potential of the new system. And I get this characteristic equation where A, B, and C are again combinations of the model parameters, but they are only combination of the model parameters that refer to the mechanical aspects of the model. So we don't have in this part of the equation at all the chemical part. And all the constants that refer to the chemoattraction are in this part here. So we see that this term here is a positive term, this term is a positive term, so we cannot get really positive growth rate from the chemoattraction kinetics. So this means that the current model wouldn't be able to give rise to networks if it weren't for the mechanical forces. So in terms though of being able to form networks or sprouts, I decided to ask this question because I was seeing very often that vascular sprouts were assumed present. That I wanted to see well whether I could induce sprouts to come from the existing vessel. So here I have assumed a cell distribution here and a constant source of a chemical here. In the upper panel, I am not allowing the cells to interact mechanically with the extracellular matrix, so this is just pure chemotaxis, and we see that cells from the entire vessel, if you can call it, move towards the source of the chemical, whereas in the lower panel, I'm allowing for this mechanical mechanical interaction between the cells and the extracellular matrix, and you see better defined sprouts towards the center of the chemoattractant. Of course, after a while, all the cells want to move towards the source because there is nothing really telling them that you know they should stay back. Other questions that are interesting with regards to this problem is how do the sprouts decide to branch out again? The current equations would, or the current simulation would not be able to give rise to branching out. So there is a question, where does this instability at the tip come from? Is it because of the presence of chemical factors? Is it because of the inhomogeneities in the extracellular matrix? Or is it just the cells are programmed based on age? And in the equation that I showed you, I didn't include any haptotaxis because I didn't want to include haptotaxis before I actually saw experiments that were showing haptotaxis. So haptotaxis has been defined as the movement in gradients of fibronectin, gradients of adhesiveness. But mostly these gradients were on gels that were deforming at the same time. So the movement of the cells could have been affected also by the reorganizing underlying extracellular matrix. So currently at Vanderbilt, my colleagues are using the same chamber to generate gradients of fibronectin, and so far cells have not been moving on linear gradients of fibronectin. But in fact, haptotaxis, or what was traditionally thought as mechanical factors, may be related to mechanotaxis, and this is totally not my work, but I thought it was some very cool picture by Yuli Wang that was published in the Biophysical Journal, and it shows yet another mechanism for cell movement. So here is a fibroblast, and this part is a soft gel. This is a gel that is stiffer. Otherwise, they are the same. The same amount of fibronectin is on both the gels. And a source of chemoattractant is put here. And as you let the cell respond to the chemoattractant, it goes from the area of the soft gel to the area of the hard gel. But if you take the cell onto the hard gel and you put your source of chemoattractant over there, something nice happens. Does it? Something nice doesn't happen. Okay, the cell starts moving, it meets the soft gel, but it doesn't like the soft gel, and it moves off. Okay, so obviously the cells do respond to the mechanical properties of the substratum. They sense areas of matrix rigidity. So I know that my model had come into had some criticism, but I think that I believe in cells that like areas where the matrix is aligned and stiffer, and these are simulations that I'm showing now.
Oh, by
yes.
The way, in their paper, did they do the control stuff to see whether it's, because for example, they can just put nothing there, just the gel, to see whether the cell will just automatically move from soft to hard. Did they do that?
If the cell moves from soft to hard?
Yeah, because it seems like...
They did it over...
It seems, did any control experiments? Because it seems to me the cell might just don't like the soft gel at all, right?
Ah, but here the cell was initially in a soft gel and it used the soft gel to migrate into the hard gel.
Yeah. But in that case, you have chemotaxis here.
Yes, you have in both cases chemotaxis. In both cases, the cell is induced to move with chemotaxis, but in this case, the cell likes the transition from soft to hard, whereas here it does not, it refuses the transition from hard to soft.
It can go upstairs but not downstairs.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So if I remember well, the way these gels are made is polyacrylamide gels that are the cross-linking is done at different densities. So here the gel may be cross-linked at a higher rate than over here, making this harder than here. But the chemical properties that allow the cell to adhere onto the gel remain the same. Yes?
There's something even more startling than this. Dennis Disher presented a couple of weeks ago on mechanosensing, and one of the things he talked about was that cells differentiate differently in
yes.
gels of different stiffnesses.
Yes.
And so some cells do like hard gels and some cells do like soft ones. But you've got to start with a stem cell to find out.
Mm-hmm.
And the soft ones created brain, the medium ones created muscle, and the hard ones created bone.
Nice. I have heard, but I have only heard about it. I have not seen it.
Well, there's a paper that came out with the only one in press, and now he told us about it.
Okay, I will look at it. I remember hearing about Mina Thistle's work, but if anyone knows better, they should correct me. Of being able to take malignant tumor cells and by plating them onto gels of different stiffnesses, actually give them a normal phenotype just by controlling the stiffness
exactly.
of the underlying gel.
Yeah, now this is all happening on the adhesion, what it calls the adhesion synapse.
Okay.
And so there's signal associated with the integrin receptors adhering to the matrix, and then the cell signal pathway inside.
Yes.
But the differentiation.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was sort of my last slide. That a lot of work has been focusing on different aspects of this loop. A lot of work has been done on cell-cell signaling. But the signaling can affect also cell traction motility, which in turn can affect the extracellular matrix and its properties, which can affect cell shape. And by affecting cell shape, you can affect cell function. So there, really, there is a big cascade of events that interplay in this morphogenetic sequence. So in terms of directions, there are many directions. So I just put a couple of them there. Actually, I'm interested currently in looking more at the cell level, the cell population level, but it is also interesting in studying how the extracellular matrix fibrillar organization affects cell traction, cell motility, the transition between cell traction and cell motility. And I believe that the question of whether it is chemical or mechanical factors that control the formation of the vascular networks is still an open question. So these are three papers that have been published related to that work. And this work was started in collaboration with Bob Vernon, who was at the University of Washington, and I thought he was at Hope Park, but he may no longer be there. I don't know.
They renamed it.
They renamed it, okay.
Yeah.
Together with Sharon Lupkin, who was actually the person that you know pushed me into the first steps into research, and Jim Murray and Thodoros Katsaounis helped me with the numerical methods, and Anne Richmond and Zi-Ching Tsai are now at the Vanderbilt University studying chemotaxis on linear gradients of cells, and a lot of the work trying to measure parameter values was done using the equipment at the Friday.